Hi, my name is C. Travis Webb, and I'm editor of The American Age. And Jeffrey Barkin, my great friend and editor of Monologuing, asked me to contribute another monologue to this year's issue, which I was very happy to do, and pleased and flattered that he asked. And so I want to, of course, start by saying thank you, and also a thank you to Nat Kimber for all the things that she does for Monologuing and the project and the larger community. I, of course, appreciate everyone's time and their ears, and the few minutes that I have to speak with you. So, you know, our primary, you know, the American Age started out with very great ambitions, and it's still, you know, I think those ambitions are still alive and well, but our production is now primarily limited to the podcast. You know, and there's a number of kind of initiatives that were initially in the work, and those have gone on the back burner for a variety of reasons. But the podcast is the main thing that we do, and I do that with my co-hosts, Stephen Fullwood and Seth Rodney. And we cover a great variety of topics. And, you know, as I'm sure you can imagine, this past year, we spent a great deal of time talking about COVID and all of the things related to that. We tried to take it from a bunch of different angles, but you know, I appreciated Jeff's emphasis this year in the monologue on healing and calling attention to the things that can be healed. And I thought it was a pretty powerful framework because, you know, a lot of the things that we've accomplished in civil society, and probably throughout history, but certainly in civil society, is connected to our ability to call attention to things that we don't otherwise notice. So this was a huge part of the civil rights movement in the mid-20th century, 1950s, 1960s. A big part of what turned the page for civil rights in the United States was civil rights reporting. There's a reason why the Library of America series collects the civil rights reporting in two volumes, because it was largely responsible for changing people's opinions of American apartheid. This was also critical in the Vietnam War. Obviously, it was the first time that people were seeing the actual cost of war, those that were not intimately involved in it. So one of the things that we spent a great deal of time talking about, and this ended up being related to COVID, but you know, the conversation stretched into a few other areas, and that was dystopias. And so, you know, Jeff asked me to bring in our three most popular episodes, but we did a lot of episodes on dystopias, and they all kind of tied together in that running theme. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about dystopias as they relate to this idea of healing and what can be seen. A big part of what makes something dystopic is that a dystopia hides what's really happening from the people who live within that system who do not directly suffer from that system. So in most dystopian novels or movies, there is a class of people who are happily oblivious to the consequences of producing that society. And then, of course, you have the people who are subject to the barbarities of that society. And, you know, you see this in The Hunger Games and any number of other, you know, Blade Runner. Blade Runner, I guess, is more a more completely post-apocalyptic dystopian setting. But the idea, I think, in general holds. Another aspect of dystopias is that they tend to be monocultures. So variety is not a value that is championed or defended in most dystopias. So there is one accepted narrative. There is one accepted form of art. There is one accepted language. There is one accepted history. And a part of this monoculture, a part of this kind of ideology, this hiding that takes place, this obscuring of what's really going on, is that the ideology of dystopias filters out other people's pain. This is one of the functions of ideology that doesn't get talked about a lot, but our ideological lenses, whether they be liberal, conservative, progressive, libertarian, any sort of political orientation that one becomes strongly invested in, is a way to filter out other people's suffering, other people's displeasures, other people's discomforts. We see the difficulties of our own tribe. We see the problems of our own affiliates, our own suffering, but we do not see the suffering of others. And this, you know, this leads to a number of consequences, you know, that you could trace in any number of dystopian stories. But I think it might be a little bit clear where I'm going with this. We are, you know, as we've discussed in the podcast, we are flirting very dangerously with dystopian tendencies in the modern West. And this tendency is on fire in the United States and in Canada and New Zealand and Australia. Europe seems to be weathering it a bit better than we are. But, you know, if you just, if you kind of reach for the kind of dystopia that you would typically see in like a progressive circle, one that I would identify with myself, is sort of think about an environmental ruin. This is often an aspect of dystopia. So the world has become ruined. It's denuded, it's divorced of life, you know, biodiversity is destroyed, you know, variety is gone, the animals are missing, man and woman are alone in the world with just themselves. All the beauty and the majesty that brought us and cradled us into being is wiped out, is destroyed. And so what is being destroyed in that? In that environmental ruin. It's not life, right? Life continues. Life, the primordial ooze or sludge or bacteria, goes along very happily in dystopias. Viruses, if you consider them living, you know, depends on the biologist that you talk to, they function just fine. Funguses will keep right on fungusing for millions of years. What is destroyed in an environmental dystopia is variety, is difference, is individuality, is uniqueness, is idiosyncrasy. You know, dystopias, environmental dystopia doesn't just apply to plants and animals. It applies to humans, too. It applies to people. If you could preserve all the ferns in the world, would you destroy the last redwood? I know that may seem like a silly comparison or a false comparison, but this is what we are currently engaged in doing in the modern, advanced, previously liberal democracies. We are ratcheting down on difference. We are erasing all of the things, or we're obscuring. Erasing is probably too strong. We are obscuring the very things that make a project like monologuing worthwhile. The production of art and gathering together to hear people sing and perform and argue over poetry. I don't want a world full of ferns. I can't imagine that anyone listening to this show would. Would you confuse a farm with a forest or a garden with a wilderness? You would not. You would understand that these things are simplifications of the great wildness that surrounds us. And that is, war has been declared on, and not for public health, but for institutional power, for people that do not care about the same things that I would guess most of what you and I care about. And that is, you know, people who wear their hat a little bit differently, who dress a little bit differently, who stay up late at night, you know, reading Gerard Manley Hopkins or trying on women's pumps when, you know, they, you know, played college football or something like that. The, you know, weirdness. This is what is disappearing from the world. Think about all the things that you don't see or ever hear about in COVID reporting, how dystopian this is. Think about if in the year 2020, like leave the COVID suffer. I don't mean to minimize COVID. Of course, this is an awful thing. Anyone that has suffered from it, anyone that has long COVID, anyone that's died of it, any family that is suffering from that, of course, my heart goes out to them. This is terrible. I am not diminishing it. But think about if you were 74 and 2020 was your last year on Earth. What about your bucket list? What about that last road trip you were going to take with your wife? What about the birthday party with your son that you couldn't celebrate? Where were those stories in the media? What about the suicidal teens who can't stand another day of staring at Zoom? What about all the missed "Do you like me" notes being passed in grade school? What about all of those things that didn't make it in the news next to all of the COVID case counts and the relentless counting of hospitalizations? I'm not saying these are not important pieces of information. I'm not suggesting. Think of how the monoculture works. Even the fact that I am bringing this up probably reflexively in many of you, you know, it triggers your COVID gag reflex. Wow, but what about, well, we have to protect this, we have to protect that. Of course we need to protect people. Of course we need to treat people humanely. But think about all of the things that are obscured as a result of that. All of the things that didn't happen in 2020. All of the things that we were said that we had to do in order to get back to the lives that we loved and that we've done and still have not returned to normal. Think of the college campuses where 99% of the people are vaccinated and they're still being discouraged from socializing together. You know, how many vaccines and lockdowns does it take before people pause and think and reassess the things that make life worth living? You know, the Earth itself is on a precarious string, and I don't just mean from anthropogenic climate change. I mean, it's on a we're on a rock in empty space circling a violent ball of plasma. And you think that there is anything certain in this life? No, the only way that life can really be lived is with our eyes wide open, fully aware of the risks and the terrors of being alive. There's no way, if you cut that off, if you denude that, if you amputate those tendrils from your spirit, there is no life that is worth living. Life is not an abstract quantity. Life is all of the idiosyncratic things that thrill us and frighten us. And that is absolutely under assault by bureaucracies. It is under assault by institutions. It's under assault by your LCD screens. It's under assault by the relentless noise of social media. It is dystopian. And so for us in the podcast, I mean, there's a lot of disagreement around this, and you know, but we all do share a common concern, which is that the things that make all of this worthwhile, that allow me to take the time out to speak to you over, you know, I don't know what we call it, the silicon or whatever, and sort of, you know, sent out over, collected over Wi-Fi signals and Ethernet cables and all of the rest of that. Like, we have to preserve that. We have to fight for that. We have to see that in order to be able to heal the ruptures in our society. If we don't see those things, if we don't see what we are refusing to see right now, then there won't be a society left to heal, because we have to be able to see the pain to treat it. Thanks very much, Jeff and Nat, for giving me the little soapbox to stand on. It's always a pleasure, and I very much value the work that you both do, and of course value the ears and brains of the listeners that sat with me for a few minutes. Thanks very much. Hope to see you on the other side.